Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the Saudi war against the Yemeni people has now led to Saudi Arabia's cessation of oil shipments through the Strait of Mandeb. This after two Saudi frigates were targeted by Ansar Allah Movement's missiles, which is defending Yemen against Saudi attacks. Where will all of this lead to? Well, stay with us as we take a look at this on this debate. We're going to cross over right now to our correspondent on the ground in Sana'a, Mohammed Al-Attaf. Mohammed, thanks so much for being with us. Well, can you please fill us in on the latest situation there and the latest information you have about those attacks?
Yes, we're over the 48 hours, the Saudi Arabia, along with its allies, have intensified their air strikes on different parts of the country, and especially on the areas near the coastline of Al Hudaydah. As you mentioned, that the fishing boats were targeted by Saudi Arabia's warships near the coastline of Al Hudaydah. The number of fishermen who were killed and injured are still unknown, especially as the attack has taken place nearly away from the coast. But such attacks continue unabated, without despite the international community's outcry for the stop of the Saudi Arabia's indiscriminate air strikes. On Friday, the Saudi fighter jets bombed also the fishing seaports in Al Hudaydah, where the most of the people in Al Hudaydah depend on fishing for their livelihood. So the continued Saudi offensive on Al Hudaydah in order to capture the seaport, which is the only lifeline for millions of Yemenis, is really putting more people, more people's lives at risk, especially those who depend on fishing and also those who depend on this only lifeline. The situation is getting is really catastrophic, as also the Saudi Arabia's use of internationally banned weapons, as on Friday also, as a number of people were killed due to the when one of these bombs went off. So the situation in Al Hudaydah is getting difficult. In case the international community is not going to put an end to such offensive, and also to bring political factions back to negotiating table, the lives and also the situation of these poor people will be at really a catastrophic situation, and also more lives will be hurt and will be killed.
All right, thank you so much for that update. Very sad situation, of course, on the ground for the people there in Yemen. Press TV's Mohammed Al-Attaf out of Sana'a. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, Director of Eurasia Future, Mr. Adam Gary, out of London, and former U.S. Ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia, Mr. Richard Murphy, out of New York. Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off in New York. And Richard Murphy, how critical is the Strait of Mandeb for the world oil market?
Well, the supplies are on the tight side at this moment, and the decision a few days ago by Saudi Arabia to stop its shipments through Bab al-Mandeb is going to add pressure to the supply of oil worldwide. So it's not a critical problem yet, but it's moving in a direction of considerable instability in pricing.
Do you think that, staying with you, Richard Murphy, do you think that the Saudis overreacted, or they acted apropos to the situation that's taking place there in the Strait?
Well, there have been two actions. As I mentioned, the one of, I think it was on Wednesday of this week, when there was shelling of some tankers around the Bab, and then yesterday the shelling of the Saudi warship. That will only encourage the Saudis to say, well, the rebels of Yemen are not ready to seek a political solution, so we are justified in continuing our attacks.
Okay. What about that, Adam Gary? What our guest there in New York said, that then the Saudis will say that we're justified in our attacks and continue with them.
Well, they may well likely say that. The key is to understand that the strategic goals of Saudi Arabia more widely and of OPEC more widely aren't necessarily reflective of the situation in Yemen, which is increasingly a stalemate in terms of strategic developments. And that stalemate, of course, is being fought on top of a humanitarian disaster zone. Right now, Saudi Arabia has it in its interest to increase the oil price without looking like it's going out of its way to increase the oil price, a security situation that can easily be blown out of proportion is a very convenient way for any country that wants to increase the overall price of oil to do so. So in that sense, Saudi Arabia's reaction to the events in the Strait are very much related to its desire to increase the price of oil, something which ironically will also benefit Iran at least until November and possibly after November, so long as the countries that have committed to buying Iranian oil after the new old sanctions, to put it that way, come back in, still buy it. So it's a strange situation where once again oil and the ability to manipulate its price is essentially guiding the rhetoric regarding a military situation in Yemen, which for all intents and purposes has been a total stalemate since the assassination of former President Saleh in late 2017.
So are you saying, Adam, that this is something that the Saudis are actually behind, or what? I just want to get a little clarification on what you just said.
Well, the Saudis are obviously going to claim that the security of tankers in the Straits is bad. And I'm not saying that the situation is good. Driving anything in a war zone, and indeed flying anything above a war zone, is de facto less safe than doing so in an area that isn't a war zone. But it's clearly in the strategic economic interest of Riyadh to exaggerate the situation as much as reasonably possible in order to get the oil price up, especially after Trump admonished the Saudis to keep it down just about a month ago. So now along comes an excuse to have the oil price float back up again after there was some sort of vague commitment between Washington and Riyadh to keep it down.
Richard, how significant is it that the Strait of Mandeb can be under the control of the Ansar al-Lob movement at this point in time, more than 3 years after the start of this war that was initiated, of course, by Riyadh?
Well, first let me react to my colleague's comments from London. I think the Saudis are not trying to manipulate the price of oil through ceasing traffic through Bab al-Mandeb of their oil tankers. I think it's the issue of the conflict with the rebel Yemen authorities, and they would like to find every way to pressure them to get back to the negotiations. Now, all of this is complicated by the current rhetoric exchange between President Trump and President Rouhani. You do this, I'll do that. That's agitating the present scene, but I don't think that the Saudi move is just for economic reasons, the price of oil.
Adam, from a psychological point of view, now, how significant is this that, as I had asked Richard, that more than 3 years after the Saudis launched this war against the Yemeni people with the most sophisticated weapons and airplanes, that now Riyadh has to stop sending its oil through the Strait, allegedly due to the fallout from the war that it's waged against the Yemenis?
Well, it's significant because it relates to the price of oil. I understand what the gentleman opposite is saying, but the fact of the matter is, in a region dominated by a war for prices of oil on multiple fronts, every country is going to use every reasonable or even semi-reasonable excuse at its disposal to try to keep the oil price high. It's a simple matter of supply and demand. It's in the interests of every energy producer nation to keep the price of oil as high as possible, but with the caveat so that it doesn't then become more economic for America to start doing the shale business and getting that going. So again, it's a delicate balance even then. And then, of course, on the opposite side of the spectrum, it's in the interest of energy consuming countries to have the oil price as low as possible. So it's significant in that sense, and it's also significant from a military point of view, as it shows that in spite of Saudi Arabia and its partner in the UAE being far more militarily formidable in terms of their military hardware, a war against a ragtag group of the Ansar Allah movement who aren't particularly well armed, it's nevertheless a stalemate. And this is why the only solution in terms of the military conflict is to look at what's happening with the Astana process for Syria. That has been vastly more successful than many of the naysayers thought that it would be. A process similar to the Astana process, which involves Russia, Turkey, and Iran as guarantors of a negotiated political settlement in Syria, if something similar to that could be repeated in respect of Yemen, and I recommend that such a meeting be hosted in Islamabad, if that were to happen, then we'd at least be seeing some attempt to break away from this blood-soaked stalemate that just goes on and on and on.
Okay, interesting point you brought up, Adam Garrett. What about that, Richard? Why aren't we seeing entities such as the United States or the UK actually trying to pressure to initiate some type of agreement between these parties? Because obviously they would definitely suffer if the Strait of Mandeb really becomes extremely problematic for any oil shipments to get out of that. So why aren't we seeing Washington specifically be more aggressive?
Well, you are seeing efforts to involve more parties to try to get the Saudis and the Ansar to the negotiating table. Now, I don't know what was said precisely in Berlin at the meetings just concluded a few days ago, but those involved the Americans. Those talks also involved the Russians. And I'm sure that one of the efforts is to see what role Russia might play in counseling movement towards peace negotiations. There's not been any serious coordination with the Russians, between the Russians, the British, and the Americans on the Yemen crisis, as far as I'm aware. This may be the beginning.
Well, what about that, Adam? Why do you think that we haven't seen a lot of involvement as far as trying to bring this conflict to an end by especially these Western nations?
Well, to understand that, one has to understand one of the systematic differences between the Yemen conflict and the Syria conflict. In Syria, many of the great powers are directly involved. The US has men in Syria, Russia has men in Syria, Iran has men in Syria. In Yemen, it's simply a matter of America's allies in Riyadh and Abu Dhabi being on one side and Iran's allies in Sana'a being on another, but there's no American presence directly. There's no Iranian presence directly, no presence of European countries. Certainly Russia has pretty much nothing to do with the conflict other than being one of the responsible international powers who may be involved in a peace process, even though I wouldn't bank on it because Russia's quite removed from the conflict. It's been many decades since Russia's old ally of South Yemen ceased to be a nation, but therein lies the rub. The conflict in Yemen is frequently presented as is a two-sided conflict with the Ansar Allah movement on one side and the Hadi government supported by Riyadh on the other. There's a third faction which is becoming incredibly important, and this is the Southern Transitional Council based in Adan, the former capital of South Yemen. They now control some of the most vital territory in the former South Yemen, and while the Saudis are a bit skeptical of this movement, to put it mildly, the Emiratis are very much supportive of the former Southern movement that's now called the Southern Transitional Council. This movement is, of course, as it always has since the early 90s, it's advocated for a restoration of Southern Yemen, which could actually be the only gateway towards peace. If the borders of the former South Yemen have more or less re-solidified as an area that's partly Southern Transitional Council controlled and partly Hadi controlled, we can say that a de facto South Yemen does exist and it's more or less stable, whilst the former North Yemen is where the root of the present day conflict now is. If there can be some agreement reached between the Southern Transitional Council, Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, and one, or at least one, at minimum one, superpower to say, okay, South Yemen is back on the map, then I think it would be much easier to try to rectify the crisis in the former and once again, once in future, if you will, North Yemen. So that's one element of a peace process that should be explored. And whether it's redividing the country formally or invoking some sort of confederal model, I think that all parties to the conflict, both domestic and international, need to admit that, at least in the medium term, a united Yemen looks incredibly unlikely in any form.
Oh, Richard, if the Strait of Mandeb really becomes too dangerous for ships or any oil shipments to pass through, do you see this war, the Saudi war against the Yemeni people, expanding with more parties getting directly involved?
Is that addressed to me?
Yes, Richard.
Oh. Well, more parties may be helpful. I mentioned Russia. Russia has an influence in Iran, not a dominant influence, perhaps, and it has not been a significant player in Yemen, but its voice is heard in Iran. Now, the Saudis have said from the beginning that the problem is Iranian encouragement of the conflict in Yemen, and that although the balance, the military arms are totally disparate between Ansar Islam and Islam and the Saudis and the Emiratis, they show that they can do something with a few rockets, with an attack on a tanker, attack on the Abu Dhabi airport the other day, to continue to persuade the Saudis that the enemy of all, above all, is in Iran. And that's going to be very hard to disabuse the Saudis. The efforts internationally should be of some assistance, but they have not resulted in getting the parties back to the table. They've not met each other, I believe, for over 2 years, face to face. But more international effort can only be helpful, but it's going to be very hard to persuade the Saudis that the root of the problem is not in Iran and not in North Yemen.
Well, that's quite interesting. I mean, Richard, do you not see the irony of it all when it's the Saudis flying their bombers, flying their planes, supplied by the United States, over the country and bombing residential areas continuously, blockading the country that very little basic supplies can even get in? And at the end of the day, because the Saudis say it's the Iranians, then the world should accept this? What about the reality on the ground, Richard?
The reality on the ground is miserable. And Yemen risks becoming for Saudi Arabia what Vietnam was for the United States. We were the major power. We had all of the potential to crush the enemy, the North Vietnamese. And it didn't work. And we got bogged down for years. And I'm afraid that that's the current situation in Yemen for Saudi Arabia and the Emiratis. There's got to be a way out, which is going to have to be a political way out.
What about that, Adam? Do you think that part of the reason why it stalled is that basically many would say that some of these countries that are supplying the Saudis actually want to make sure that the Yemenis are taught a lesson. They want to make sure that they don't have certain alliances. How does that figure into all of this? And now what is key to try to bring this to an end?
Well, yes, indeed, there's a great deal of truth to that. In the situation I envisaged, where South Yemen would be reestablished according to the will of many in the form of South Yemen, we would then possibly see a North Yemen that could very worryingly develop into a kind of Transnistria, only with a coast. Now, Transnistria is this landlocked unit, landlocked entity in northern Moldova on the Ukrainian border, geographically isolated from its only fraternal would-be partner in the Russian Federation. One could envisage something similar in North Yemen, where unless some sort of compromise government could be installed in Sana'a, you'd see an Ansar Allah government in Sana'a with no allies in terms of its neighbors, and a Saudi and Emirati navy that would be able to successfully blockade and control most of its ports, as has been the case since 2015. Now, this would be dangerous because it would mean there would be a failed state, and the poorest state in the Arab world would become even poorer. The alternative, though, which is allowing Iran, the only real international ally of Ansar Allah, the Houthis, to have a presence there, would be like Saudi Arabia scoring its own goal. They're fighting a war to try to allegedly lessen alleged Iranian influence in the Arabian Peninsula, which isn't very strong to begin with. And if one were to redivide Yemen and Ansar Allah were to form an internationally recognized government, its only real ally would be Iran. So in this sense, while I do in fact still think that redividing Yemen is one of the only ways forward, the government, finding a government in North Yemen that everyone can agree on, is much more difficult than okay. is the case with South Yemen, where there's sort of a ready-made government in the form of the Southern Transitional Council.
Okay, well, and on that note, unfortunately, we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with us. Director of Eurasia Future, Mr. Adam Gary out of London. Former U.S. Ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia, Mr. Richard Murphy out of New York. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the group right here. See you next time.